Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What's Your Next podcast. This is Laura. I am so excited to be back. And today I have a Gone Girl read-alike, a propulsive thriller that you, once you start reading, you cannot stop. And the book is The Lies You Wear by Elle Marr. This book is available on Kindle Limited as a read and listen. It is awesome if you're doing tandem reading, if you want to just get yourself in ears and you listen to the car. And then also pick it up at night if you want to read it in Kindle. This book is for you. The Lies We Wear is a thriller, a mother-daughter relationship, a cat-and-mouse game. We're trying to figure out what happened in the past and how the past secrets are catching up with the actual present moment. In addition to talking about The Lies She Wears, Elle shares her experience reading The Sunrise and the Reaping by Suzanne Collins. If you're curious about this book, if you want to hear, like, maybe is this a book that you should pick it up? Does it under-deliver? Does it over-deliver? Is it just the right book to pick up? If you're a Hunger Games fan, this episode will tell you, give you some answers. So enjoy this episode.
Hi, Elle. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I am a thriller author. My seventh book, The Lies She Wears, is coming out in just a short amount of time, actually. And I love reading. I am a reader at heart and always hoped that one day I could muster up the courage to finish a book. And here I am now, seven published books later. It's wild. It's a wild feeling.
Yeah. So talk to us about, like, were you a domestic suspense thriller reader? Or was it something, because thrillers are an interesting dynamic because you had to build twists and turns and conflict and plotting and then motivations and red herring. So it's a more complex book to write than probably a straightforward experimental thing. So talk to us about, like, your experience. Were you reading the genre beforehand and then decided to dabble into it? Or were you trying writing in other genres? And then it's like, you know what, this might be like a better fit for me right now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if anyone's ever actually asked me that before. I did not start out writing thrillers. I began writing what I thought was romantic suspense.
Yeah.
And then I realized that the suspense was the part I liked the best of it.
Yeah.
So I cut out the majority of the romance way, way back when I first started writing over a decade ago. But I began reading just voraciously as a kid, like as a 9 or 10 year old. I read everything you possibly could, but that also included Goosebumps. That included some early Stephen King, which I had no business reading as a child.
Yeah.
But what got me into writing thrillers was really reading, of course, Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl. I think like a ton of writers and readers who discovered the genre at that point. That's what got me into writing it, because I read that and was like, wow, I just want to eat up every page. I want to eat up every page of this book. And I want to write something as propulsive as that genre. And as I dove more into reading books of that kind, I realized that every page really held that same kind of allure for me. And I wanted to create that myself.
Yeah. So talk to some writing a propulsive, like a way that keeps grabbing the reader, whether it's having cliffhangers, whether it's having red herrings, whether, like, how do you construct this book? Like, do you, because sometimes people are pantsers and they just like let the book unfollow, and other people are flutters, or you may, and the editing says you may have to move things around and do it. It's like a construction. It's not this straightforward story stuff, like a love story, like a romance. Like, yeah, we have beats, but it's pretty straightforward. This is a little bit more complex.
Yes. And I think every published novel really has like a certain level of complexity. Certainly there are certain genres that are a little more structured, and I don't want to say formulaic, but like readers, like cozies, like readers come to the table expecting certain elements to happen at certain points.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's why it's called a cozy. It's comforting. It's known kind of in a certain way. And for me, writing thrillers, to your point, I never, it's a balance of writing something that each chapter has its cliffhanger that in my mind forces the reader to turn the page and discover what happens in the next chapter. But also it has to be surprising and unexpected, which can be hard to do for me. A lot of the magic happens in editing. I will say that with my professional editing team, And I'm always driven by the question of, am I bored?
Yeah.
Does this bore me? Because I know for sure the reader will be bored if that's the case. So if I know something intriguing me, I'll rip it apart. I'm very ruthless with my own writing. It's a challenge. Yeah. Writing is hard.
Writing is hard. I think it's hard. And it's like you have to think about the reader, but you also have to think about what you enjoy and what parts of you are capturing the attention. Especially you want to be surprised. Like there's an element, the twist is not for the sake of twist. It's an element of surprise. It's like something's going to happen. Just like Gone Girl was a surprise of the midpoint where we hear Amy's story. And they were like, oh, like, hold on, what story were we like following? That element of surprise that we're going for. And then,
right. Or Parasite, not a book, of course, but Parasite, the movie. I don't know if you saw that, but that was the same level of like awakening for me. I know it was much more recent. It was 2021, I think.
Yeah.
But like the same level of just complete mind blowing, artistic, aha, epiphany, much like Gone Girl for me, to your point of like the middle point where Amy is revealed. Parasite, where I was like, this is not the movie I thought it was.
No, and I think that's like the gift for you as an author is like you get to mind blow like your clients and like, what am I reading? What is going on?
I love that. This book, The Lies She Wears, has a moment like that, which I'm very proud of. I'm happy about that.
Yeah. So let's talk about The Lies She Wears because actually like the setup is really interesting. It captures your attention. We get character dies. This is the first chapter. We mourn. It's a mother-daughter relationship. It's a strained mother-daughter relationship that we have. That we just see this going on. And then we get a mysterious letter from the mother after she dies. And it tells you, I kill someone. It's in the synopsis. So this is not like anything. This is a great setup for like not like character relationship. This is like you got the mother and daughter and you got the strained relationship. Like you got the grief aspect, but you have someone who was not the best mother that the mm-hmm. character needed. And then we mm-hmm. have the secret of a death. So it's like, you're like, wait, do I know this person? Do I understand? And I was present because in letters, like you were in the space, in the vicinity. So it's block memories. It's like you're working with that and also cognitive decline. Like,
yeah.
And museum.
Yeah, it is a lot at the outset as the foundation of this story. It's to give like a quick premise, I guess, to summarize everything that you just said. My main character is a museum curator. And she receives a letter from her mother, her recently deceased mother, confessing to murder. And so she's completely caught off guard, feels like she's discovered her mother's darkest secret. But then more letters surface and new victims appear. And suddenly Pearl, my main character, feels like she's caught in this deadly game of cat and mouse. She doesn't really know where the threat is coming from. But she knows that someone seems to be following in her mother's footsteps. A confession is real. And it feels like they're getting closer to her.
Yeah.
And so I tried to create this really constant level of tension and claustrophobia a little bit, which plays into her role as a museum curator of Asian masks.
Yeah.
Masks, of course, being something that covers faces, that conceals our identities, a full face covering. And in the case of artistic masks, they can be somewhat scary. They can take on scary forms for cultural purposes from hundreds of years ago or even present day. So there were a lot of layers that I used to kind of begin the story, each of which I was like, oh, I want to explore that. Oh, I want to explore that. Oh, can I add this in? I think it worked. The dovetails nicely.
Yeah.
I really kind of wrote this story for myself.
Yes.
For myself first.
Perfect. Which is perfect because as a reader, I'm like, no, I can see you enjoy writing the story, which is sometimes some books are hard to write. I understand that. But some books are like enjoyable and the author is like having fun doing it and you can feel it as a reader. It's just like food, like when the food is made with love and the food is made with love.
100%. But yeah,
I made it really propulsive, like the setup. It was like, where does this going and what is happening? And it's like the perfect like vacation read. Like you just like go for a vacation, just like sit still, read it, just enjoy.
Love it. Thank you.
Ride. And I think this book will be available on Kindle Unlimited as a read and listen, which is perfect. If you're an audiobook listener, you can actually borrow and get the audiobook too, and you can do tandem reading, which is exciting for accessibility. So
that's right.
All right. So let's talk about some book recommendations. What type of books do you tend to read? Do you read domestic suspense, or do you read other genres? I know you have some book recommendations to share with us.
Yes, I read widely. I think you have to as a writer. And then just my tastes have always been super eclectic. I recently, I got into Fourth Wing, like millions of other readers. And then that led me down to, finally, A Court of Thorns and Roses, which I had never touched before. And always read super widely. I think I actually started reading fantasy as a kid, and that led me elsewhere. But so I got into a big fantasy kick recently.
Yeah.
And then I went back to reading some more recent thrillers that have come out. Not What She Seems by Yasmin Ango came out last year, and that was fantastic. I loved that book. I love Ango's writing style, and her characters are so rich. That story set in South Carolina, where there's a mystery of our grandfather, the main character's grandfather is killed, and that's very early on, not a spoiler. But then she must fight her own proverbial demons to uncover the truth behind that death. And it's a really great small town thriller. And then another book I read recently, a book that I'm currently reading, is The Lies You Wrote by Brianna Labuscus, which is about a forensic linguist, which is just a fantastic premise for me. I don't write police procedurals because I'm too intimidated by all the detail. I have not done like a Citizens Academy day at the police department. Yeah. I should, but I haven't done that yet. And so I don't have that breadth of knowledge to do police procedural. Yeah. So I love reading other people's work that does. And yeah, The Lies You Wrote is really interesting so far. I love the idea of taking writing samples and having a forensic specialist just decipher it and reveal all of these different layers to that piece of writing. I'm all about every kind of book. If it's read and published, I never do not finish. I always read to the end. I'm like, I'm sure the author's going someplace. I might not like where I get, but I always follow that journey to the end.
So you actually read The Sunrise of the Reaper. Tell us about it.
That's
a book that has not been mentioned. And I'm surprised because it's such a big book that came out this year, and it's a big series. I actually read The Hunger Games. It was a formative time of the dystopian era. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about the experience. Like, I know it's a sad book. It's not, we know the indie from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about your reading experience with it.
Sunrise on the Reaping by Suzanne Collins was a great read for me. I was a huge fan of the Hunger Games trilogy when it first came out, the original books. And to your point, it was a formative time for me. I was in college or nearly out of college. And one of my roommates was like, I just found this at the airport. You should read it. And I did. I just completely like sat still for 3 days and just demolished every page. And so I was not expecting that same kind of experience, but I was excited to re-enter that world and that dystopian framework where the Hunger Games are even a possibility. And of course, during Sunrise on the Reaping, that's Haymitch's story. And so the Hunger Games have been going on for a good few years at that point. I didn't read the prequel before that.
I think it's 25. I think that's like the turnaround.
25 years, yeah.
25 or 50. It's something like a quarter kind of deal.
Quarter quell. Yeah. 25. Yeah, it was really interesting to have that world be established, but still kind of have everyone maintain a memory of the before time during the quote havoc that occurred that required the authoritarian regime to rein everything in so tightly in a way that was really negative and violent, destructive. And so being in Haymitch's world and discovering him as a young buck, innocent 16-year-old kid before the drinking problems was really fascinating, and it brought me a greater appreciation for prequels. I love the character work, the dissection of how he became who he was in the first Hunger Games story when we meet him. It was so heartbreaking. He's never been so heartbreaking, but everyone knows that's going to be sad. I kind of forgot, not that I forgot he had like a major drinking problem, but I forgot I wasn't using my like critical thinking skills. I was just recalling that he was an alcoholic and kind of apathetic, which I think anyone would be. When tasked as a mentor ushering in the next flock of tributes, and anticipate the depth of his pain. And it was done in such a way that was so compelling and revelatory to his, what becomes his character in the end. it was so well done ushering us along that journey with him that I forgot how sad the ending would naturally be. And it the ending wasn't so devastating that it would put me off from reading again. I would read it again.
Yeah.
I would read it again. I don't reread a lot of books, but I would read it again just because the detail was so fun. And seeing the different characters that we first met in the Hunger Games trilogy, seeing their beginnings, like we also see Effie Trinket, was really fun. So I would definitely read it again. I thought it was great. Recommend it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing, because I think listeners may be interested and maybe scared to read it, or some listeners who are like, is it going to be sad, or is it going to be something that's it's not going to deliver what we are looking for. So I'm glad that this one actually did, and I'm glad that this is like a continuation of the world, and it was a merit actually having the prequel. So yeah,
I actually I actually really enjoyed it, because I was worried it would become this, the story and the tone would change to match the hype that came to the Hunger Games trilogy and came to Suzanne Collins' world, that it's just become this massive idea. And I thought that Sunders and the Reaping would also kind of be disproportionate to the original tone of the stories. And it wasn't. It kept it. It was really like on the same frequency, which I appreciated. It reminded me how the stories were so simple, but also so deep and profound. And that's to my mind, good young adult writing. Yes. Like, it's not getting so explicit, because TikTok has made everybody explicit, and whether you're 13 or 17 or 77, but like, is actually written appropriate to the genre or the age group, which I appreciated. I was impressed that she didn't kind of waver from that.
I'm kind of glad. So now I'm like, okay, I really need to pick this one up. Like, I actually, you're selling me the book, which is the point of this show. It's to tell you what I need to read.
I love talking books.
So awesome. Elle, tell us where to find you online.
Oh, on all the social platforms. I'm mostly on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and Facebook. I also have my website at elmar.com. And I'm always around. Send me a comment, like, or DM.
Awesome. Thank you all for being in the show.
Thank you for having me. It was great talking books.
Thanks for listening to the What to Read Next. For more book lists, cozy reads, and library tips, visit the whattorenextblog.com. Your next great read might be waiting there. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattorenextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.